a new panel in the House Armed Services Committee will look at reforming the acquisition process inside the Department of Defense. Committee Chairman Buck McKeon says the vice chairman of that committee, Congressman Mac Thornberry, will lead the panel. DOD's acquisition process takes a lot of criticism, but some parts of it should be a model for other agencies to use. Bill Greenwald is a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and my guest on Pentagon Solutions today. He testified to a subcommittee of the House Homeland Security Committee about how DHS could apply some lessons learned from the Pentagon. And Bill tells me what he told the subcommittee.
Obviously, DOD is not perfect here, but there are some areas that in the past that they have done. And one of those is to bring in commercial contractors, commercial solutions, and try to leverage what's out there in that marketplace, all the research and developments that are going on, like, for example, in the software and information technology industry. I think that's one of the things that they've really done a great job.
One of the things that you write in this testimony and that you said to the committee is that the shift to lowest price technically acceptable is a bad idea, and it is taking us kind of back to the future, as it were. You refer to where we were in the 1980s in this contracting at DOD. What is it about the idea of LPTA that you think is the most detrimental to getting the best result for the federal government?
Precisely because there's a solutions out there that the government really doesn't know about. And I think there are a number of cases where commercial companies have solutions, and LPTA kind of assumes that the government knows the requirement and outlines that requirement, and then bidders just respond to it, and whoever has the lowest price wins. Well, there are other things out there. The government doesn't know best. The government doesn't know everything. And there's a need for best value solutions and best value contracting out there. And I think LPTA has overtaken best value in that regard. That's something that is of concern.
You write told the committee, sequestration of the Budget Control Act offer the opportunity to refocus the government and oversight agencies on the bottom line and to implement acquisition reform goals in the mid-1990s tailored to any new circumstances from the last two decades. What's your observation that's changed in the last two decades that require a little bit of a shift or a regrouping?
Yeah, we've kind of gone full circle, when the budget went down in the post Cold War, there was a need to we need to do everything smarter, faster, cheaper, with limited resources, and that's when the commercial item contracting reforms of the 90s, Federal Acquisition Streamlining Act, and so on came into place. When the budgets increased, a lot of the government moved away from many of those good practices, and the idea is that more than likely with this next budget downturn, there is that opportunity to go back and take advantage of some of those good best practices in acquisition.
You say the key is to identify which best practices could be replicated at DHS, those that DOD is using now, and which so-called best practices are really dead ends that have added cost but no value to the taxpayer or our national security. Do you think there are more of one of those than the other of those categories, Bill?
Hopefully there's a mix, and I do think there's some good things that have come in the past, and we need to go out and study those. And that's something that when I was on the Hill and we had GAO helping us go out and identifying the best acquisition practices that are out there, not just in the federal government and in other agencies, but in other governments and in the private sector. And I think that's something that the oversight community really needs to refocus again on, is what do we do right? And when we do something right, let's benchmark it and try to bring it into the rest of the government.
And how successful do you think DHS is? How well equipped are they right now, do you think, to be able to do that, Bill?
I think they're challenged like many agencies in the federal government, and a lot of that has to do with the acquisition workforce and the fact that they haven't. And I think that's where DOD can have some real potential lessons learned, because they've been trying to develop their acquisition workforce for the past several decades. They have tools in place. They have programs in place. It's not perfect, obviously, but there's some some lessons learned in that training and developmental of the workforce that can be applied over there. So I think DHS has those challenges. A lot of other agencies have those challenges, and perhaps we need to look at where we have the best acquisition talent and apply them across the board.
It's your view, as you expressed to the committee, that any reforms that they want to do will require a lot of congressional involvement. My initial reaction to that is I can imagine a lot of eye rolling, or worse, at DHS and even at DOD. Thinking about that concept, is that fair? I mean, you make the case in your testimony. Explain why you think that's so important.
Well, the last round of acquisition reforms back, and I would say that the most successful ones were 1994 and 1996. And in that, there was a really bipartisan coming together of the members of the Senate, the members of the House, and the executive branch to really try to solve what was then the most critical acquisition reform problems of the day. And I look as the budget comes down, we have that same environment that we need to same opportunity that we had then, and that needs the coming together. And frankly, if Congress doesn't focus on it, if the executive branch doesn't focus on it, we're just not going to make the progress that really needs to be made.
All right, you've got two principles that you conveyed to the committee, and then five recommendations, and I'd like to walk through each of those.
Yeah.
The principles are pretty simple, so that won't take us too long. The first one is that government unique is expensive. Is this a message that you think is finally getting through, not just at DOD and not just at DHS, but across the government as a whole?
You know, it seems like a simple principle, but I don't think that message is coming through. And I think because of the increase in budgets that have happened over the last 10 to 15 years, that needs to be reinstitutionalized. I think the oversight community is pushing more and more towards driving solutions to government unique, and government unique is more expensive. So this is basically a principle. Be careful when government unique solutions are being proposed, because they really are more expensive and probably aren't going to work the way you intended, that you thought they were going to.
The other principle that you conveyed to the committee is be wary of one size fits all solutions. And it seems to me, at least on first thought, that might be kind of the opposite of what you just said about government unique. If you're going to try to buy off the shelf, then if you're not going to be able to use one size fits all, then you get into customization. We've seen projects go awry there, too.
No, I think what I've there's a time and place for, obviously, commercial off the shelf. There's a time and place for customization. There's a time and place for buying something in a large major system. There's solutions that are focused for smaller systems, for rapid systems that you need to get on the field quickly. There are different arrangements that you should look at for your buying IT, whether large systems or small, and the difference for services. And so the point there is that you have to break this up into pieces, and while government unique is still going to be expensive in all of those, and be wary of that, make sure that you're not passing legislation or regulating on something that isn't applicable.
So the core of this is that, it seems to me from the way you're telling it, is that the requirements process and understanding exactly what the solution is, not necessarily what the stuff is, figuring the solution first and then determining where it fits on this kind of continuum that it sounds like you're drawing.
Well, yeah, what type of acquisition you're looking at, and not necessarily maybe what the solution is, but what your needs are, and essentially it's going to be a budget constraint. So what your budget is as well on this.
All right, here are your five recommendations. The first one, professionalize the acquisition workforce, and you're not alone in calling for this. What does that look like, though, in your view, a professionalized acquisition workforce? What's the finished product?
The essentially, first of all, a workforce that is knowledgeable about all of the different types of acquisitions and understands and can conduct market research and understands the commercial side, where the IT market is, for example, what types of services, what type of things the providers can give to the government, those type of things. What are the problems that actually occur over and over on weapon systems acquisition, and how can you make those adjustments? So just a lot of knowledge that is out there but needs to be brought around through the entire workforce.
You write about something under this one. If we get to a point where we're not satisfied with the professionalization of the acquisition workforce, you refer to an experiment that is under consideration in England. The British Ministry of Defense is proposing to contract out the entire acquisition function to a private, non-conflicted firm. What are the people who are advocating that in Great Britain saying about why they think that's a way to go about this? What's wrong? What are the flaws they see in the system that they have now that would cause them to do it this way?
From what I can understand, it'd be a great interview to have with the Brits on this, is that they have been trying to professionalize the acquisition workforce, trying to get their workforce to understand the intricacies of the industrial base and so on, and just haven't succeeded. And I think this is kind of a last ditch effort. Probably the where the U.S. government can look to is there other non-conflicted help that they can get, technical help, whether it's the FFRDCs or private firms that can advise them on the technical and do some of the market research that's out there. But I think the Brits have essentially said they don't have the money, and we're going to consider contracting it out. Whether they do it or not, we'll see. But it's an experiment to watch.
That's Bill Greenwald, visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, talking about his testimony to a subcommittee of the House Homeland Security Committee on Pentagon Solutions today. The thrust of the testimony, how DHS can apply lessons learned in acquisition from the Pentagon. More recommendations from Bill Greenwald next. Next on Pentagon Solutions on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. The Defense Department's acquisition process does take a lot of heat, but Homeland Security could take some acquisition lessons from DOD. Bill Greenwald's a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. He testified to a subcommittee of the House Homeland Security Committee about how DHS could apply some lessons learned from the Pentagon. He gave the committee a list of five recommendations. You heard him talk about the first one a moment ago, and I asked him to tell me about the second one.
There's so many things that DOD is doing that they could piggyback over, but it's also directed at DOD because there are so many things in the commercial marketplace, and there's so much more research and development in the commercial marketplace, particularly in the IT industry, that DOD can take advantage of. And so don't replicate that. Take advantage of it. Know your market research. Know what they're doing. And put your R&D in areas where you can leverage that R&D versus actually replicating it.
Your third recommendation is really interesting because it goes really against the grain of where DOD and to some degree DHS contracting is right now. Make it really hard to start a new too-big-to-fail program and then enact a strong non-McCurdy-like system to cancel programs if they don't meet goals. I can think of a number of examples that are probably qualified to be classified as that at both agencies right now. How do you do some of the big earth-moving type acquisitions that they need to do without making them too big to fail?
Well, I think what you need to do first off is there needs to be a more robust technology maturity phase, and I'm thinking of a number of deployable operational prototypes that are funded in research and development, and they're not deployed across the agency. And that's where you get the technology maturity level. The things that are driving cost schedule performance problems are immature technology and requirements creep. And if you can validate all of these things up front and then start a program when the technology is mature and have a short time period, you at least have a better shot.
All right, but we're back to requirements again and making sure we get those right on the front end. And I wonder what you think about how to nail those down, or do we go back to a professionalized acquisition workforce, and if we're successful there, we're going to be successful in the requirements phase?
Obviously, both points are important, but I think in the beginning of the requirements, it's the requirements community has to accept a lesser requirement than what they're looking for if they're going to be successful here, and to start and making incremental progress along the way. Trying to do revolutionary requirements is not going to be conducive to cost, schedule, performance, success if that's how you measure a program. Now, there should be room for revolutionary type of programs, and I think that's what those deployable operational prototypes, those rapid acquisitions, where we can spend time on those.
I think that's fascinating because, Bill, that takes us to a place that is purely cultural then. It's in DOD in particular, but also within DHS, not as much in DHS just because they haven't been one huge agency for as long. But the idea of making do, and I'm doing air quotes as I do making do, with, an 85 or 90% solution sounds like it's what is underlying your proposition there.
It absolutely is, and that's something. The last 5%, the last 10% of the requirements is what's driving costs here, and maybe those requirements really just can't be met. And we're seeing they can't be met for 5, 10, 15 years from now. Maybe it's better to get something in the field now quickly and get it out to the users and have them be able to experiment with it than wait for that 20-year time period when it's supposed to be perfect when it normally isn't.
Now, you're not just somebody that's writing about this stuff for the fun of it. You're experienced and well-credentialed in this field. Is it your sense that the people that would need to accept that are willing to accept that, or is this something that maybe the budget situation will force down their throats?
I think the budget situation will help, but I also think there was a break, particularly in DOD, when the services post-Goldwater Nichols moved over in the requirements and really got out of the acquisition world. And I think there's a lot of debate going on the need to bring back and to grow the acquisition expertise in the services, in the uniformed military services. And I think once that happens and bringing together requirements and acquisition position should allow them to make the trade-offs. Right now, there's not an incentive to make that trade-off.
All right. We could probably do the rest of the conversation and the interview on requirements and incentives and all of that, but I want to go to the fourth of your recommendations for the House Homeland Security Subcommittee. Establish an innovation fund that allows for the rapid deployment of operational prototypes and the maturation of technology to support systems acquisition. This is, I think, really fascinating because it would give the agency and other agencies that replicated it a pool of money to try these things out and essentially try before you buy.
Absolutely, and that's the reason for it, and that's also the reason. And you can do a number of things with it. One, you can mature that technology. You can try it. You can experiment with it. You can do two or three iterations of it potentially. But also, you're getting kit out to the field. The actual users can address it. And because it's short term, you're more than likely going to get something that's off the shelf or modified off the shelf, and you're bringing in new commercial type contractors who can try to solve your problems for you.
The fifth recommendation is services and IT acquisition. Identify and adopt commercial best buying practices. They haven't tried this yet, Bill?
We tried with Klinger Cohen, and frankly, GAO has outlined a number of reports that outline the best IT and services best practices, and frankly, the Congress has put some of these into statute, and implementation so far has not been as good as I think a lot of observers would like it to be.
You get the understatement of the interview award with that one. I mean,
I'm trying to be diplomatic.
I'm not aware of anybody that I think would say that Klinger Cohen was an overwhelming success in execution.
No, I'm afraid not. Although some of points there are still valid, I think it needs to be updated and looked at the best practices that are currently going now. but unfortunately, the execution on that has not been stellar.
Do you see any hope in Fatara? Do you see anything in there that would lead you to believe that things can change and that people will follow the letter of that law if it's passed?
I think it's what the most important thing about, I think, for Fatara is that they're having this debate again, and that Congress is interested in bringing in, making IT acquisition important again. I'm not sure if all the things there are actually going to work. I think there's some really underlying cultural issues, you know, dealing with can we accept commercial and can we accept the commercial way of buying and overseeing commercial companies. And that is not really dealt with in Fatara or dealt with in Clinger-Cohen. It's probably going back to FASA.
I want to transition from your testimony to the Homeland Security Subcommittee and talk about a piece that you wrote, Bill, for the Wall Street Journal just a little bit ago. And that dealt at a pretty high level with the Amazon IBM CIA transaction and the cloud purchase that Amazon tried to get and is still in limbo right now. Overall, when you look at the landscape of protests, how do we get to a point where I understand the protest process is necessary, and I understand that in order to be fair, government contracting in this one respect is not the same as me selling to you in the private market. But I wonder where you see the balance line being that we can get more out of the protest business and more into the execution business.
Yeah, I think what's really important here is to understand where industry is coming on, the incentives in industry, and the incentives on the federal government. And I think there needs to be a balance there. The federal employees and the workforce needs to be able to be incentivized to go after best value type solutions and not be constantly afraid of protests. On the flip side, the industry needs to ensure that they're not being treated arbitrarily and capriciously, but at the same time, they have to understand that the strategic type of protests in which have been a factor in the past really just cannot continue, and there has to be an incentive against doing those type of protests.
Bill, I'm just about out of time. Before we wrap up, I want to understand where you see this headed, if you think we're headed in that direction, or if you think we're going to continue to languish along, and in order, if that's the case, what's it going to take to change the protest landscape in your view?
I think Congress is going to have to take a look at it, like they did in Clinger-Cohen. There was at the time the GSBCA was a difficult issue, and where that protest process was going and the incentive structure. I think we have to kind of look at the history of the last 20 years with GAO and where they're going, and maybe it's time to do some oversight over that particular venue, and maybe it's time to create a new one.
That's Bill Greenwald. He's a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, my guest on Pentagon Solutions today.